Hello, and welcome to Multiform. Every week, I get together with my friends to talk about Xbox news, rumors, and the games we've been playing lately. New episodes post every Monday morning. You can email the show, questions@multiformpodcast.com. This is episode 238. You know, I was thinking today, just to do an aside here, I was thinking today, why do we even bother numbering the episodes? It doesn't really matter.
Fun. Like numbers are fun. I like numbers.
It is fun to see it go up and to know how long, but it's really more about the date and the title of the episode, which is usually the biggest news story of the week. Because when you're talking about news, like this podcast won't be relevant 5 years from now. We're talking about stuff that'll be really old news at that point. So anyway, I'm Tim Shelton, and I'm joined this week by Spencer Rain.
Yo, hello.
Who is shrouded in darkness because we're recording earlier in the day than normal, and he's got a lamp behind him and no sunlight on his face, so he's backlit. So
there is sunlight. He's just there is sunlight off to my right, but it's kind of overcast, so it's not like great sunlight.
Yeah, well, and I mean, who would put their desk in front of a window? Well, I guess you could, but like, you would block the rest of the room's access to the light if you put your desk in front of the window.
Yeah. So I've got the illumination over my shoulder and then the illumination from my monitor, which, hold on, I need to pull something up that's white so you can see my face. Not Reddit, that's black. Okay, there. Now you can see my face.
That's slightly better. I've got dueling monitors with at least one of them has the show notes up, which is bright white. By the way, I wish Google Docs and Microsoft Office 360, the Word cloud version, like, why don't either of those support dark mode? Like, Windows supports dark mode now. Android, iOS, like, everything supports dark mode. It's better for, like, energy conservation. It's better for a thousand reasons, and yet Google Docs does not support it, and I'm pretty sure Microsoft Office in the cloud doesn't either. The local version does. The cloud version doesn't.
I think the cloud version might. Maybe. I thought it did because I use it at work. Like, I don't actually use it at work, but sometimes, you know, you get emailed a document and it opens it automatically, like in the online Office suite. And you're like, I don't like that.
I will tell you, I have a bone to pick with Office cloud version. So
it's terrible.
Well, yeah. So the last offline version I bought a license for, I think, was like Office 97 or whatever that version was in the late 90s. And I've been using it for decades now. My new computer is the first one that I did not upgrade or install the old version. And I just said, I'm going to use the online versions. Now, I do have a free year subscription to Office 365. So I could download the desktop version. But like you, I use the cloud version of Office at work a lot because we use shared documents for things. And the cloud version of Microsoft PowerPoint is one of the worst cloud software I've ever used in my life. Like, the undo button seems like it has to send a piece of data to the moon and back before it can make a decision. You'll like paste something and wait 60 seconds for it to happen. And then if you click undo, I think what's happening is it's like, oh, I need to check every other person that's ever logged into this document to make sure that they didn't undo something before I undo this person's thing. So it's doing like all these calculations. But it's completely in the cloud. So it's no bearing on the processing power of my local machine. It's 100% dependent on Microsoft. And the fact that that's not instantaneous when it has these giant server farms powering it means it's just poorly optimized software. It's just not great. It's not a great experience. Plus, you know, the online versions are shaved down on the tool set because they want you to subscribe to the premium version. But I am subscribed and it still sucks. So there you go. In rant. But for this show, we use Google Docs because originally when I created the website, we were going to use like a Google website. And we do use Google domains, but
I don't know. I think Google Docs is like far and away better than the Microsoft equivalent on the cloud.
It really is.
I just don't like it. Because the reason why is because there's a local version of it and it's just better. Like, maybe...
Which one?
Google Word. like local Word. So obviously with my job, like, we have the Office suite, like, it's paid for, like, we have the most current version of it, and that's what I use on my day-to-day, and it's just so much better than the cloud version. Now, maybe if Google made a cloud or local version, which they never will,
well, they do actually have
Docs. Oh really? I didn't know.
You can it's I'm stuttering. It runs in Chrome, but you just have to install a plugin for Chrome that enables offline Google Docs. It's made by Google. It's an official product, and then you can use it offline.
Interesting. I didn't know that. Well, anyways, that's why I think just the local version of Word is just infinitely better. But Google Docs, I love a Google Docs.
Well, and excellent, I mean, Google Docs, the reason it's product. So good is because it was built cloud first, right? It was built in the in the website. Having an Android phone, and I also own a Chromebook, plus two Windows computers, it's just easier to use Google Docs for most things for personal because it syncs to Android seamlessly and all those kinds of things. But it's not even like it's bad on iOS. Like, my wife uses iOS with the Google products. But that is neither here nor there. We're here to talk about Xbox and video games and adjacent things. I'm excited about this week, Spencer. I think there's more fun, interesting stories to talk about this week than we've had in quite a few weeks. Maybe so far this year, since it's been kind of a weird year.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about this week. I wish Gus could also be here, but Gus was not home, and Spencer and I were trying to record earlier in the day today to leave some time, because we're recording on Sunday, the 12th, and tonight is the finale of The Last of Us, and I'd like to watch that when it comes out. So trying to get my whole schedule moved up in the day, and Spencer just likes recording early because, you know, then we have the whole day ahead of us.
Or at least I immediately feel like I have to go to bed when we're done.
Yeah, which we usually record in the evenings, like on a Friday or a Sunday or a Saturday, depending on the week, but not today, early in the day. Okay, Spencer, talk to me about what you've been playing. I got up to a ton of stuff this week, so I don't want to steal all the thunder. Yeah. I'll let you talk first.
Well, yeah, it wasn't that great of a week just because I didn't have as much time, and we kind of watched a little bit more TV in the downtime that I did have, but it was just one of those weeks where there wasn't as much. So, you know, I just played some more Hogwarts. Not a ton. I didn't hit any major milestones this week. Like last week, I talked about how I got the broomstick finally. So I'm just a little bit past that. I would say I'm trying to think. Honestly, it's been like several days since I played that, so I can't even remember what I was doing last. But yeah, so there's that. That's still kind of like the main thing that I'm playing. I did play some Crusader Kings 3 on console, just a little bit. I have a save. There's actually, it's so weird how they like create like the achievements for that on console. It's like 60% of them require you to be in Iron Man mode, and then like the other ones don't. And which, for those that don't remember, Iron Man mode just disables manual saves, so you only have auto saves. But it's not like their difficulty is any different. Like some of these, like I've gotten all but a couple of the ones that don't require Iron Man mode, and it's not like they're any easier than the Iron Man mode ones, or they're any harder. It seems almost arbitrary how they decided that, which is strange to me. But yeah, so I kind of just, you know, been playing that. You know, we'll talk more about that game specifically here in a little bit, because there was some Paradox adjacent, or Crusader Kings 3 console adjacent news from Paradox this week.
Hogwarts news too.
Yeah, kind of less interesting and more of okay, whatever kind of news for Hogwarts. Yeah. But the other, I guess, the bigger news was,
I mean, that news, we're not going to talk about that news later. We can just throw it here. They delayed the last gen versions of Hogwarts Legacy to another month, from April to May 5th. Yeah. So I mostly just threw it in here because it's like a, I don't know, make people aware kind of thing. But it's also,
yeah,
I do appreciate that they didn't delay the whole game. They like release,
oh my gosh, I know,
your next gen version, get it out there. That's the one people care about the most, and then take a little bit more time to release the last gen version. It probably doesn't feel great if you're somebody that only has an Xbox One or a PS4, but I think this is way more favorable to releasing them all at the same time and having some or all of them be buggy, like Cyberpunk. They should have done this with Cyberpunk. Focus on the next gen version, release it really well, and then take a little bit longer with the last gen version that takes longer to optimize. So there, yeah. I cut you off. I wanted to throw that out there.
No, you're definitely right. I'm glad that they separated these. Could you imagine if this game was delayed out of February all the way to May just because they wanted to tie them together? Like, that'd be crazy.
And it's already breaking like every sales record that set by Elden Ring. So like, it's doing fantastic. So they're reaping money right now, and they're only going to get more when they launch on last gen.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like, at this point, I don't even know. Like, I mean, a game like this, I just feel like would struggle so hard on a 2014 or a 2013 Xbox One. You know, I just don't see how you're going to get this to go unless it's just so, you know, tamped down, you know? So
the real like limits of the old hardware was memory and CPU, because the GPU is what it is. But I mean, they're going to have to turn the dials down. I mean, Witcher 3 runs on Switch. They had to take a lot of stuff out of the game. But you just,
well, Witcher, you know, 3 originally ran on just an Xbox One, came out in 2015. And it was,
well,
fine.
That's true. I'm trying to think of other games. Like Doom Eternal runs on Switch too. There's been lots of games that have been ported to Switch, Skyrim, which is way, way, way worse than a Xbox One. I think honestly what you just do is, you know, like on next gen, there's tons of grass and reflections and stuff and just all that.
Draw distances, bring those in.
Yeah. Draw distances, shadows, foliage, like everything gets topped down to bare minimum. Resolution goes all the way down to 720p and you cross your fingers and hope for the best. That's exaggerating, but you know what I mean. You really turn everything down.
So speaking of this topic, I went to a Best Buy this afternoon to get something, and they had PS5s, they had OLED switches in stock, but no Series X's. Although, unless they just have one, because you know how they have like the glass case that's like at the end of the aisle where they usually have the consoles at Best Buy? So the PS5 one was next to an Xbox One, like it was the row over. But I don't know if that's where they would keep the Xbox Ones, because it was just full of like controllers and stuff. So maybe that's where they keep them. They just didn't have any.
I don't know, because the Best Buy, did you go to the one on Michigan?
No, the one in Castleton.
Oh, okay. So several of the ones I've been to, they keep them at the register now, and the shelves may look empty, but you have to go talk to someone. But
unless they keep the Series X's somewhere special, they just didn't have any.
I'm sure that's the case, because I was at Meijer yesterday, which is a big box retailer. Well, not a big box retailer, but it's like a competitor to like a grocery store or Walmart. It's close,
yeah, it's
closely
like a,
to Walmart.
It's like a
they sell,
more expensive Walmart.
Yeah, because they sell merchandise and groceries. They had regular Switch, OLED Switch. PlayStation 5. They had only the Ragnarok bundle with disc. They did not have discless, and they had Series S. So the two consoles they didn't have were discless PS5 and Series X. And I'm seeing that across the board. Everywhere I go, I never see the discless PS5 and I never see Series X, which doesn't really bode well for Series X. I mean, they're probably selling a fair amount of Series S's, but the people that are buying a Series S, it's either a second console, a cheaper console for them, or I don't know, like, if money isn't an object, you're probably getting a PS5 over a Series S. If money is a factor, Series S is obviously the best option. And I don't know. It's just weird to me that they're focusing so much on pushing the Series S. I'm seeing it regularly on sale for $250. It seems like that's almost the regular price now, because that was the holiday deal. And it seems like it's been available almost nonstop since the holidays, at least at one retailer or another. Which, I love my Series S, by the way. It's actually sitting right next to my feet, Spencer. It's right over here.
Travel buddy?
Well, I was going to take it with me to New York when I went there a couple weeks ago. But instead, I took my laptop. I bought a new laptop and took that instead, which was actually a really good decision.
But yeah, basically, all of that to say, it seems like the consoles are in stock for the most part. I mean, we're not seeing a lot of Series X's, but we are seeing Series S's and PS5s. I mean, they're in stock. So at this point, the excuses I feel like are dwindling, other than just money concerns for people to not upgrade. I mean, they're going to be 3 years old this year too, which is crazy to think. I feel like at this point, I feel like this is the last year where we see cross-gen outside of sports games. Maybe. I don't know.
Didn't we get Xbox One X and PS4 Pro at the end of the third year?
2017, so the end of the fourth year,
which I don't think is going to happen this time, but I am seeing rumors start to be percolated about that. But when you look at the improvements on the PC side and the improvements on die size and efficiency and stuff, just doesn't seem feasible. They could make them smaller. I just don't think they're going to make them more powerful, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like PS5 is entirely too big. They could make it smaller, but I don't know that they're going to make a PS5 Pro.
Yeah, probably not. I think I had a segue at some point, like 5 minutes ago, before we got off on this tangent about that I was playing.
You were talking about Crusader Kings 3 and how we're going to talk about that in the news.
Well, yes, but I had a different one. But anyway, I did play Crusader Kings 3 PC for the first time since July because I got Tim's old laptop this week. And
oh, yeah, today, I just said that a minute ago that I bought a new laptop, which meant that my old laptop
had to go away.
Spencer got a deal. I sold him a mint, like in great condition laptop for $50.
Yeah.
I think on the open market, I would have probably got $200 or $300 is my guess.
Probably.
Because it's older. It's in great condition, but it's older. I did upgrade the RAM, and it does have a modern SSD. It has an M.2 SSD, so it's nice and fast. But it's, I don't know. It's crazy because you didn't say anything, but you also got a mechanical keyboard today.
Well, I was about to.
You
keep interrupting
me. Okay, I'm going to shut up. Okay. Go.
Tim's just excited. Yeah, like excited.
It's a great day.
Like the hour before we started recording, I got from Amazon a mechanical keyboard and a mouse to match my speakers, a Razer mouse to match my Razer speakers that I already had from when I played Xbox with this monitor set up at our old apartment. So I am a mechanical keyboard person now. It's funny, Tim was like, how did you even know about this brand? And I was like, honestly, I don't remember how it started. I accidentally subscribed to like newsletters from Drop. Years ago, like I feel like I've been getting their emails since like 2018 or 2019. And so weekly at the very least, possibly bi or tri-weekly, I'd get their like emails about their products, and they're a company that kind of makes like almost like bespoke boutique mechanical keyboards and like some audio equipment like headphones and optical cables and things like that. And so I finally basically just got their entry level $100 mechanical keyboard. And it's awesome. I mean, I've barely used it, but like it feels really nice. Like it's got weight to it. It's aluminum. It's backlit. It's a nice muted kind of green color with gray and kind of gunmetal.
There's green in it?
Yeah, the case is green. It's like a muted kind of dark kind of it's just a muted green color.
Like a light olive.
Kind of like an olive color, yeah. But you wouldn't really be able to tell. I thought
that was a gray.
I know it looks gray until you're looking at it. The keys are gray. I think the keys are like a light gray and a darker gray, kind of like a steel gray and like a gunmetal gray, I guess, like darker. But yeah, so that's got that. I'm looking at that right now. But yeah, so I did play a little bit of that, more of just kind of, that was before I got all this stuff. That was a couple nights ago. So I haven't, with the new setup, played anything yet. Got CK3 installed, though. I've got Humankind installed, because that was a game we've talked about on here. I think I've talked about it on here, at least. It's been delayed indefinitely for console, so I'll try it out on PC. I've got Star Wars and Pirate War, the GOAT, downloaded. I don't know if I'll actually play it, but it's downloaded. I forgot how many games I had in my Steam library because I just haven't looked at. I've had it filtered off to Mac because I had, to this point, really only a Mac that could run stuff. But I had a PC at one point, and so I had a bunch of these games that were PC only that I had filtered away. And obviously, it's filtered for all now. And it's like, oh yeah, I forgot I had all these things. Nothing really that great. I mean, Company of Heroes 1 and 2 are probably the most like prominent games. I've got all the Fallout games via Steam. And then, of course, Game Pass and its library. I'll probably mess around more with that, you know, today, this week, and maybe discuss it more next week. I don't know. We'll talk more about Paradox here in a little bit. But yeah, that's pretty much it for me.
So after last week, when we talked about the announcement of the Paradox event, that got me fired up, so I re-downloaded City Skylines, which I have access to that on Game Pass. I own a copy on Steam. I think they gave away a copy on Epic Game Store that I claimed, so I had like 3 or 4 versions of the game, but I went with Steam because I think I had a previous save game, or at least a semi-new city that I could continue building on. So I played a bunch of City Skylines. I fell really into it one day, the day after the event, I think, and I played an entire evening, really got back into it. And I started researching how to do install a bunch of mods, and I was going to go crazy with mods and try and make my city look as realistic as possible. But I realized even with mods, especially since a lot of them require configuration and guides to get the mods set up correctly, for like lighting and depth of field and all kinds of other
does,
stuff.
Does City Skylines not have a launcher?
Yes, it does.
Oh, so you can't use so because like if you're through Steam, even if you're through Steam, all right, hold on, let me back up. So Hearts of Iron 4 and Crusader Kings 3 are both Paradox games that Gus and I have modded to the end of time. And neither of us are whizzes, so you should be able to do it through either Steam or the launcher.
No, that's not the hard part. I can do that. You can install the mods through Steam, what's it called? Steam Workshop.
Yeah.
The hard part is a lot of the mods to make City Skylines specifically look realistic. When you download the mod, it unlocks hidden variables in the engine that you can then tweak. Like, to get the lighting look like a real world city instead of the baked in lighting that comes with City Skylines, you install this lighting mod. Well, that doesn't just fix it. The mod brings up this whole tool set, and then you follow a guide to get all the sliders for the most realistic.
Interesting. So they just made it a lot more complicated for some reason.
Well, I think it's to make it more customizable. So there aren't like when I was doing research on the best City Skylines mods, I didn't find any that were like fixed lighting mod or like realistic lighting mod. It was instead would be something, I forget what the name of it was, but it unlocks all these like hidden variables that you adjust to make the lighting more realistic. In the end, it was going to be a lot of work because there was like this, there was a bundle of like 25 mods that you could install all as a bundle. And then you had to configure about half of those to get it looking pretty good. And I was like, okay, this is a lot. I think I can just wait for the event and see what happens. But I had fun anyway. I played a ton of City Skylines. It's still installed on both my PCs, so I'll continue playing it when I'm on PC. The other thing that I've talked about in recent weeks is Bioshock 2. I've now completed my Bioshock marathon with the completion of Bioshock 2 Minerva's Den, which I see why people really like the DLC. I don't know that I would call it one of the best DLCs ever because the gameplay is the same as the Bioshock 2 base game. In fact, the only reason it's more notable is the storyline is pretty interesting and the twist at the end. So that was really cool. But I just want to say I had the weirdest order of playing Bioshock. I played Bioshock 3, then Bioshock 1, then Bioshock 3's DLC, then Bioshock 2, then Bioshock 2's DLC. So the most out of order thing I've ever done on a game or movie series. But really enjoyed it. Obviously Bioshock 1, one of the greatest games ever made. Bioshock 2 makes some things better, but I don't know that I really enjoyed playing as a big daddy as much as I think they thought people would. It was fine. I didn't dislike it, but you know, Bioshock 2 has its reputation. It is what it is. So I don't want to beat that horse anymore. I'm glad I'm caught up because when Judas comes out, the next one from the visionary behind Bioshock 1 and Bioshock Infinite, I feel like it's going to have a lot of Bioshock DNA in it. So I wanted to have completed all the Bioshock stuff that I hadn't played. And then also there's still rumors out there that 2K has a Bioshock 4 in the works. I think it's even been confirmed. We just don't know anything about it. We just know another Bioshock is coming. So at some point that'll happen as well. Let's see. What have I talked about? City Skylines, Bioshock 2. Forza Horizon 5 Hot Wheels. I've just been playing a ton of that. I was watching some YouTube videos about cars, and anytime that happens, I get into like going and checking out that car in Forza Horizon. And then once I do that, I end up playing the game for several hours. So I spent a two or three nights this week just playing Forza Horizon 5. And then Halo Infinite Season 3 released on Tuesday, and I jumped into that. Spencer, it's really good. Like, I know you probably aren't that eager to jump back
into Halo. I have heard a lot of good things about it.
Yeah, they've done a lot of improvements on the customization side, allowing you to like all the armor cores are unlocked by default now. I still love that way back to the launch of the game that your battle passes don't expire. So like I have one battle pass that I purchased and one that was free, both available to me to unlock stuff on. The new maps I played, they have an event going on right now that I played, and I played on some of the new maps. Those all seem really cool. I got right back into sniping. Like I was picking people off with headshots as they jump and fly through the air from across the map. And that is just as satisfying as it's ever been in Halo. So I really, really liked that. I forget when the Pit remake is coming. I feel like that was already added to the game and I missed it. I know we talked about it on the show, but I'm going to play a bunch of Halo in the upcoming weeks. Like, I had an amazingly fun time jumping back into Halo. It seems like it's in a really good place. And they're promising that after this season, the new seasons after this one are going to start coming at a regular clip like other games do. So if that is true and content starts, you know, pumping, maybe it'll give me a reason to keep going, because I kind of need a game like this that I could just jump in and play a few matches when I don't have that much time. I've talked about in the past how sometimes you have 3 or 4 hours where you can sit down and play a story game and you know, build your inventories and craft your gear and do all that kind of stuff. And sometimes you have 30 minutes and you just want to play a game or two of multiplayer. And Halo is perfect for that. So it was very good. And then I played a little Modern Warfare 2 multiplayer, which I feel less favorable about. It just feels like kind of, okay, this is what Call of Duty is. Cool. But I played that with a friend, which made it more enjoyable. Shout out to Brett, who is often on the show. I'm a little burnt out on Call of Duty, but I do play when I play with Brett and the group of guys that him and I usually play with. So that was fun. But also, the Spacer's Choice edition of The Outer Worlds came out, the $10 upgrade. I did do the $10 upgrade. I do want to shout that out, though, because one thing that was not publicized is if you do the upgrade, they are not doing save transfers. So if you played the game on last gen and you pay the $10 upgrade, like it, for you, for example, Spencer, if you wanted to play the DLC and you bought the DLC and then did the $10 upgrade, or if you just bought the new Spacer's Choice Edition, your save would not come over. So if you wanted to play the DLC with your current save, you have to do it on Xbox One. There's no way to get it to Series X.
I heard nothing but bad things about this upgrade this week. Basically,
yeah, I heard it was really buggy and they were going to patch it. So I only played about a half hour. I rebuilt my character and got back into the game and played the first mission area kind of thing. And then I stopped and I think I'm going to hold off till they do some patches.
I just heard that it was buggy and I heard the frame rate was very unreliable. Lots of drops and lots of stuttering. It wasn't Obsidian that did it. It was Private Division, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an outside agency hired by Private Division.
A little disappointing, I think, from that perspective, because they've generally done, I think, some solid.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you know what? Hold on a second. Did they? Okay, for some reason, I thought. Yeah, okay, never mind. For some reason, I thought they were the ones that did the Grand Theft Auto trilogy like remake, but they aren't.
Oh, no.
They did work on GTA called... 5, though, but yeah.
That was Grove Street that did that.
Yeah,
again, a studio called Grove Street.
A little disappointing, but whatever. It is what it is, I suppose.
I already forgot what we were just talking about. You made me think of something.
You were wrapping up your games.
No, it was the frames per second thing. I just want to highlight that I, for the first time ever, I flipped Forza Horizon 5 over to performance mode, 60 FPS. So I've been playing in 30 because the graphics look better. And hang on.
You are crazy.
Hear me out. He's giving me a crazy look.
I've played in 60 FPS since launch. Okay, there, I'm done.
Okay, here's the reason why. Normally, I'm always 60 FPS, but Digital Foundry, who I watch their videos on a lot of games to see if the 30 or 60 is stable on games before I play them and stuff, they recommended 30 on this game because it was so locked and you did get some additional visual flourish that they thought was worth it. So I don't think I ever even tried the 60 FPS mode, but what finally got me after, you know, probably 100 hours of the game is maybe not 100, maybe I'm more like 60 hours. I'll have to look it up later. I was on the map scrolling around and I noticed when I scrolled on the map that there was like ghosting on the icons. Like they would kind of like jutter across the screen. And I was like, you know, for the longest time I've been accepting this like it's just part of the game, but I wonder if this is just because the frame rate isn't adjusting fast enough for those icons to be smooth. And sure enough, I switched to 60. It makes you reboot the game, went into the map, and now the map's smooth as butter. So that's the only place where I have a complaint about 30, because I think in gameplay it was fine, but it is more responsive in 60. Like obviously input latency is halved because it's refreshing twice as often. So I don't know. I'll probably stay in 60. And also, am I really going to notice the difference? I also play this game on Series S, which is another visual downgrade. So if I'm able to play it on Series S and enjoy it just fine, then 60 FPS with a, you know, slight drop in resolution or whatever is probably worth it. There we go. That's the games I've been playing. I got up to so much this week, and it was a lot of fun. And the news is just as much fun. I've been really excited about this episode because there's so much meaty stuff to get into. The biggest news of the week is for sure, and I can't believe the way this was rolled out, is Starfield has a release date. Again, I guess is the word, again. They just tweeted it out. Like, there was no fanfare. They didn't put it at the end of their last event. They didn't have, like, hey, join us today at 5 o'clock and we're going to have something to show you, or a new trailer at 5 o'clock. Nope. They just sent out a tweet with a video.
Kind of glad.
And at the end of the video, it said September 6th. But really, the September 6th was actually buried at the end because the video was actually announcing the Starfield stream event, which is going to be June 11th after the Xbox Game Showcase. So many things about this don't make sense. So they're not doing an Xbox, a Starfield showcase between now and E3. They're doing it the same day as E3. But instead of ending the show with Starfield, they're just going to end it and say, hey, Starfield, we're going to cover in the hour after this. So in one way, they can go deeper because they're going to do it in its own event. But also, it's kind of going to feel like, for the people that tune out at the end of the E3 event, it's kind of going to feel like it was missing. You know, like, what if they were there's going to be people that are watching that waiting for Starfield, going to get all the way to the end, and they're going to be like, oh, and stick around for the next hour for our Starfield deep dive. They're going to be like, what do you mean? I just sat through this hour and a half thinking you were going to tell me about Starfield. Now here at the end, you're dropping in like, stick around for Starfield. So I think that's weird, but I understand that they want it to have its own event because they're going to deep dive for, you know, 45 minutes or an hour, and they're calling it Starfield Direct, which, like their developer direct, I think it's going to be like pre-recorded video shot in the studio where they like take you through the different parts of the game and do a real big deep dive. So that's a lot, Spencer. What do you think about this release date? How do you feel about the event on June 11th?
I mean, I'm kind of glad that they just revealed it in the tweet. I think I'm thinking back to Fallout 5, obviously their Bethesda Game Studios' last release. They basically, it was kind of, I think it was, they just randomly started streaming on like their Twitch channel or something. And it was like the Fallout, it was, you know, how Fallout 3 and 4 boots up and it's like the old style kind of like rotary, the old style like rotary film essentially. And then it was kind of like, please stand by. And then there was a time countdown. And then they kind of played a trailer and then they're like, you'll learn more at E3. Cause this was in June. Because it was announced in June and then released 5 months later in November. So they've kind of done a little bit of low-key announcing like that before. Maybe this is even more low-key. I don't know. I feel like this game, I feel like when you've been delayed a couple of times, it's kind of like, all right, we just need to put it out there. We don't need to jerk everybody around again for the third time. So I'm fine with how they just tweeted it and then said, learn more this June. You know, they said last year it'll be within the first half of 2023. Well, obviously that didn't happen.
So this is technically a delay also, even though they didn't position it.
Right. It's kind of a second delay, if you will. Also, another note about last year's E3, they said everything you see today will release in the next 12 months. Well, obviously that's not true because Starfield and, you know, whatever else. So I don't know. I mean, it's fine.
Forza Motorsport also.
Forza Motorsport, who knows? Exactly. Good point. That's true. I completely forgot about Forza Motorsport in this whole calculus.
Well, the fact that they're releasing the expansion for Forza Horizon 5 at the end of
March,
they're going to give that a little time. I could see it being May or June, but also when are they going to announce it? They did say, now that I'm remembering things, they did say they were going to have a couple small things to announce between now and June. So they
released it. Could be something.
Yeah, they did say that. So they're not going to be doing nothing between now and then. But like, also, we have games already releasing between now and June. We have what's called Redfall, and we have Minecraft Legends. So maybe they do an event where they do even more coverage of those games, plus a few light new announcements. But I think Phil Spencer, in the interview that I'm thinking of, said that the announcements that they have between now and June are on the scale of something like GoldenEye. So like,
small scale
remasters, retro stuff, like, you know, smaller things that aren't like big new AAA games.
Yeah, it's a weird it's a weird date, like September 6th. Like, I don't know. It doesn't really, it's not a very nice round number. You know, it doesn't, it's not like November 11th or
11, November 11, 15th.
11. Yeah. With Skyrim, or I think Fallout 4 was November 15th or something like that.
It's also a Wednesday. Is that weird to you? It's weird to me.
That is weird. It's not Tuesday or Friday. That's strange. But as far as like just in general, the whole idea of a dedicated show for it, I mean, they said all along we were going to get that. So that's fine. Not surprising. The timing is maybe a little weird. I think having it at E3 is fine, but I don't know. I mean, you have to think that their marketing team is like, all right, we need to pepper in throughout the show that, hey, Starfield is coming after, stick around, Starfield is coming after. And they'll probably make the show shorter because of that. Like, make it, you only need to make that an hour, because then you have 2 hours. That's already a long amount of time. And if you're really going to talk about Starfield for an hour, then, you know, leave everything else for that first hour. But
and it's the same date it always is. June 11th is the Sunday before E3, because they also confirmed they won't be on the show floor.
Yeah, the video was interesting because it was like gameplay or like in game, and then all of a sudden it was like Todd Howard talking to you from the office with like people behind him.
Yeah, and people picked out some stuff in the background. People were testing the game in the background, and for example, there was someone switching weapons, and they were using the favorite selection wheel, like the D-pad thing from Fallout 4.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll have the like favorite a weapon, and it goes onto your D-pad with, you know, three slots in each direction kind of thing. That was in there. There were also some imagery of what the inventory looks like and what the gear looks like. There might have been something about the character creator. I honestly am not too.
There was a little bit of like faces swapping.
Kind of maybe. Oh, I think it was enabling and disabling helmet was what it was. Maybe, somebody saw there was some text about that. To be honest, I'm not too eager to like get my magnifying glass out and look in the background behind Todd Howard. I think I can just wait.
Yeah, I'm
100% the game
with you on that. I like the shout out to the guy that was playing it. The guy, he was like, "Oh yeah, you might remember him from Oblivion behind the scenes video." You know, of him doing this exact same thing, like, you know,
playing it in the background, 15, testing.
Yeah, 15, 16, 17 years ago. I was like, oh, I don't remember that, but I appreciate that. I appreciate that call out.
Okay. I don't think this comes out on September 6th. I think it gets delayed again.
Oh my gosh. Why?
I think any game that ever gets announced for September in the first quarter always gets pushed at least a few months. Mm. So my prediction is that this will be September 6th. Until a month or two before, and then it's going to get pushed to October or November, and it's going to be a fall game like it always is. That's my prediction.
I don't know. I certainly hope not. I mean, this is probably the most important game that Bethesda has ever made, and it's probably
that it's an Xbox game, it's even more important to the Xbox brand.
Well, especially because of how Halo Infinite went, I feel like this is the most important game Microsoft has ever been around since. I don't even know. I wasn't, you know, competent enough in 2005, 6, 7, like when those big hitters were coming out to really know. But I don't know. I just feel like this is the most important game they've had to launch in a long time. And it's definitely the most important game Bethesda's ever had to launch.
I know this is like rose-tinted glasses looking back in time, but the two biggest marketing campaigns in my gaming lifetime, in my memory, they are Halo 3, Finish the Fight.
I definitely recall that being huge.
I remember Grand Theft Auto 4 being inescapable when they were marketing that game. Because Grand Theft Auto was big with 3, Vice City and San Andreas. But the next-gen version, because remember at the time, this was like the next-gen Grand Theft Auto. And they showed like the first image of like a street with like more realistic graphics and stuff. There was such a fever pitch, and the marketing for that was huge. It seems like in my mind that was bigger than Grand Theft Auto 5's marketing cycle, but
I don't necessarily remember Grand Theft Auto 5. Like, I remember seeing stuff about it all over the place, but to me it was like Halo 3 still takes the cake because they had like branded, like not just branded merchandise, but they had like branded groceries. Like, you could go to Walmart or Kroger and get Halo 3 Mountain Dew or Halo 3 Doritos or Halo 3,
which is now a mainstay. Cereal.
I know, but back in 2007, it wasn't.
Yeah. Like, when I go to the chip aisle at the grocery store these days, I'll find ads on chip bags for games that came out 6 months ago. It'll be like Velveeta macaroni and cheese brought to you by Watch Dogs. Like, I just made that up, but that's the kind of stuff like that I'll stumble across. And it's like,
it's actually funny. Okay. I noticed too, like when I go to the Kroger's around here, I feel like I see all the time they have this NFL branded Tostitos, and I'm like, the NFL season's been over for a month. How many of these did you guys print and then not sell? Like, they're Colts branded, you know, Tostitos bags. And I'm like, Colts haven't played a football game in over 2 months. How do you still have these?
Well, I mean, that's not even that bad. I've seriously seen, like, gas stations don't turn over certain drinks very often, I think, because you'll, like, occasionally I'll go to buy like an energy drink or a Diet Coke at a gas station, and they'll be advertising, they'll have cans that still have Call of Duty on it. And I'll be like, oh, okay, no big deal. I'm not going to redeem it, but, you know, I'll buy it. And then I look and it's the Call of Duty from 2 or 3 years ago. And I'm like, how long has this can been on the shelf?
Modern Warfare, not even Modern Warfare 2. It's Modern Warfare 2007.
I've easily seen 2 years old Call of Duty cans on the shelf. And obviously those codes are no longer redeemable. I'm sure you can't redeem a 2 year old XXP code for Call of Duty. Maybe you can. Maybe those things work for years. But
I remember
it is funny.
Like M&M's bags 2 years ago.
There was more than that. Remember, wasn't there the little jelly crawler candies also?
Like the Cheez-It ones too, I think.
I don't remember Cheez-Its.
But all of this to say, Tim, you think they need more of a marketing campaign for Starfield, like a bigger one, such that they need more time, or what are you saying?
I think that they always, you know, eventually you have to put a date down because you need the build up and you need the marketing campaign when games are this big. Also, you need your brand to look good headed into the fall. But it seems like a trend to me that when games get in, well, first of all, games get delayed a lot recently, but also it seems to me always when teams announce stuff for end of summer, like September, this early in the year, that they more times than not don't hit it. And if I'm Xbox, I think Spider-Man released in September and PlayStation does do some stuff in September, but traditionally Xbox is not put stuff out in September. They have not hit September timelines. I don't think they've even tried with anything except for Forza. So, and with the way things have gone in the last few years since the pandemic, I just feel like this is going to be, their best intentions are going to be to get it out in September, but my prediction is this is going to be a late October or November game. If I were them, that's what I would expect. Now, I hope I'm wrong, but to be honest, like this game is important to the ecosystem and to the fan base, and it's something new. You want this to land and be as big as like an Elden Ring, but which is huge. I mean, Skyrim, it's following up Skyrim and Fallout 4. Like,
I think regardless of when this game launches, it's going to be huge. I mean, I think even with Cyberpunk, both sides of the Cyberpunk coin, like number one, the hype was massive. I think the hype for Starfield is just as massive. So it's going to sell well, A. And B, even if it's bad, like broken and having issues, which again, my Cyberpunk experience was not like that because I was playing on Series X, like it was fine. But even if it releases and it's classic Bethesda jank and has some bugs, even up to the level of Cyberpunk, it'll still sell massively because of the hype. And I feel like the hype for this game is insane. Like it will sell well. And I think any time of year, it doesn't matter if it's September, it doesn't matter if it's June, it doesn't matter if it's November, January, I think it'll still sell.
I'll tell you this much. We talked about console earlier availability. You need to have Series X on every shelf before Starfield hits. If you can't walk into a store and get a Series X by the time Starfield comes out, you're missing out on console sales because people are going to buy Xboxes for Starfield. There are Bethesda fans that are trapped on PlayStation that will buy a second console for this game. It is that big of a game. Anyway, that's enough of that. Number two, Paradox Interactive Announcement Show. Is it just me or is that a terrible name for the show? Paradox Interactive Announcement Show.
Like it is an announcement. Like it seems a little bit of a redundant title. Yeah. Like just call it the Paradox Interactive Show or something.
Yeah, or Paradox, I don't know, it feels like there's one too many words in that. I do appreciate the matter of factness though. Like everybody else is trying to make these fun like Sony, State of Play, Xbox, Developer Direct. And Paradox Interactive is like, hey, let us yell stuff at you.
It's an announcement show.
Yeah, we got stuff to tell you.
As opposed to we just sit around and look at each other's show.
Wait, Nintendo, I forgot to blast Nintendo too, because they also have Nintendo Direct. Yeah. So like everybody else is given these like
fun, they could have called it like Paradox Interactive Direct.
Yeah, or like, to be honest, I'm mostly comfortable with like Direct or Showcase seem to be the ones that are like, well, even Direct is kind of cutesy. Like they're trying to evoke that you're like getting direct access from whoever. So like, Show or Showcase, I guess, are the most direct to me. So like, this could have easily been the Paradox Interactive Show or Paradox Interactive Showcase, but Showcase kind of is a different concept. I don't know. Regardless, it feels like there's one too many words. It's four words for what is effectively like, come watch our YouTube channel for 30 minutes. So we're not going to talk about every game that was announced. There are some that were PC only. There were some that were DLCs for existing games that are not exactly mass market appeal, so I don't think they warrant talking about on a podcast. So we're going to talk about the ones that are notable and the ones that are interesting to the cast of our show, Spencer, myself, and Gus. So the first one is the only like major new IP, which is the Lamplighters League. And it's the subtitle is "In the Tower at the End of the World." It's coming to Xbox, PC, and Day One Game Pass. So the fact that this is coming to Day One Game Pass means I'm going to check it out just because I have access to it. But it does seem interesting. So they said it's coming in 2023. It's a turn-based adventure game taking place in 1932. So it looks very much in the style of like an XCOM with, or like a Gears Tactics with like turn-based action. They did add something new to the genre where you can like scope out the area before you like reset and it switches to turn-based. So I guess you can like run around the area really quick and you can do one or two like stealth attacks to take out like strategic enemies, and then it'll default back to turn-based. It's almost like you get to scout and pick where you place your stuff before it kicks into turn-based mode. So we'll have to see how that turns out. But Spencer, did this do anything for you? I thought the 1932 aesthetic was really cool.
Yeah. I was just thinking like, it looks kind of interesting. You know, I'm not a huge fan of the art style or kind of this style of game. I played Wasteland 3 and, you know, kind of got more than my share of kind of that isometric turn-based strategy game style. So, but I will say it is interesting looking like the premise, like the globe-trotting kind of adventure premise. Some of the characters are interesting. I think, yeah, like that 1932 style, like, you know, leather jackets and white scarves and, you know, goggles and those like leather caps, you know, that they would wear when flying like biplanes or things like that. Like, that's kind of cool. I do kind of like that. And like you said, it'll be Game Pass. So we'll see. I mean, it looks interesting. I will kind of be maybe following it a little bit. Like, this seems more interesting to me than some of those other kind of third-party partnership games that Xbox has announced in the last year or so. Like, the first one that comes to mind is like Contraband. I don't know why.
What was the turn-based game that this developer made before? I told you when it happened, and now I can't remember.
Oh, let me Google it really quick.
The Lamp.
Harebrained Schemes. They did...
It's a tech, like a...
Oh, Shadowrun.
Shadowrun.
The Shadowrun games from the 2010s. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to remember. So yeah, that's where that comes from. Yeah, it looks interesting. I think the only thing I find off-putting about it at all is that it is slightly cartoony.
Like, yeah, that's what I mean by the art style, yeah.
Yeah, the low texture kind of stuff. It's more, it kind of has like a Sea of Thieves kind of palette to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like very... like everything was carved out of clay and then hardened kind of almost, but the setting looks cool. I do like some turn-based games. So I think in general, I'm open to it, and hey, Game Pass, I appreciate that. And that's going to be a recurring theme here. A lot of the stuff they announced is coming to Game Pass Day One. So this next one, we don't need to talk about in much detail. I just kind of want to throw it out there. It's called Life by You. And it looks like a straight up clone, or not a clone, but a direct competitor to EA's The Sims franchise. Like, they showed a little character in a house and you building their house and having them cook food. And it literally was exactly the gameplay of The Sims, only done by a different studio. So the only thing I can think of is that The Sims is still insanely popular. Mm-hmm. So having competition in that space can only benefit everybody. Hopefully, you know, driving innovation in both The Sims and in Life by You. And I wish that we had that in SimCity. Like SimCity died after SimCity 2013 and Cities Skylines picked up some of the slack. I wish that both were still being made and that they were competing and that they were both, you know, driving the best out of each other. So I think competition there is good.
Yeah. I don't have any comments on it. So I'm not a big Sims guy.
I did play The Sims when I was younger, but
my wife did. She loves The Sims. She always asked me, like, do you have The Sims? I'm like, yes, I have it on Game Pass. And she's like, why am I not playing that? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know why you're not.
Yeah. So the next one is up your alley, Spencer. Crusader Kings 3 announced their next DLC, Tours and Tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
They did not give a release date. They just said wish list on Steam. It's going to involve like traveling to tournaments and doing stuff outside of your location. And then just to throw it in before you react, they also announced the Royal Court, the previous expansion, will come to console this spring. So they kind of have
two
a delayed
ago, actually.
They're oh, two that's
behind.
Two?
Yeah, they're two behind on console.
Well, at least it's coming. So coming this spring. So that means in the next 3 months or so, we should get the Royal Court on console. And you have to assume between then and 3 months after that, you'll probably get the Tours and Tournaments sometime this year on PC. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's so the Tours and Tournaments is the fourth major expansion for CK3 because the first one was Northern Lords, which was a Viking-centric one. The second one was Royal Court, and then the third one was Fate of Iberia. And like, so it's focused around Spain and Portugal. But yeah, so this is cool, kind of. People, the reaction was negative, pretty negative actually on Reddit and the Paradox forums towards this DLC. People were kind of just, a lot of people were kind of pointing to other systems in the game that need revamping. I won't get into any detail just because I don't think people necessarily care that are listening to this. But yeah, I think the reaction was pretty mixed to this from what I was seeing. To me, it's kind of cool. You know, it's as the name implies, it's kind of introducing two new systems. Tours being you tour your realm, and it's more of a role-playing kind of change. Like, it's adding more role-playing depth rather than gameplay depth necessarily. I don't know exactly because I didn't you know watch anything beyond the trailer. So I don't know how much it's adding, but it's adding that mechanic to where you tour your realm and, you know,
and other realms.
Yeah. And then tournaments, obviously, it's a way for you to organize tournaments. It was interesting. There was a concept. I don't know if it was concept art or if it was actual game screenshot, but for that, it actually showed almost like an Age of Empires looking kind of settlement where you kind of zoom in and you see where the tournament is happening, which is not something that Crusader Kings has ever done. You know, the extent of the map in Crusader Kings is you just see the countryside. You never really see, and you see like little tiny settlements. You never really see anything detailed. So that was kind of interesting as for what that, you know, may or may not mean. But Royal Court later this spring. So that's cool. I'm glad that is coming to console. I will probably get it. And before you talk about City Skylines 2 more, Tim, I wanted to say they also...
Way to spoil the surprise.
Oh, yeah. Well, you kind of hinted about it. I was just going to say the other kind of Spencer-adjacent game they talked about was they did announce yet another expansion for Europa Universalis 4. This game is their oldest game they still support. It's 2012 is when that came out. Or 2013. 2012 or 2013. Either way. You know, a decade old.
So it's tied with City Skylines because it came out 2013.
Yeah, and this is, if you count the like music, you can buy music packs with Paradox Games because they like develop music that's supposed to be connected to the gameplay. It seems like kind of a racket if you ask me. But if you count those expansions on Steam, this is the 68th DLC for this game, which is, and like probably like, I think I didn't count, but there's probably been about a dozen major expansions, like game-changing expansions, which is insane.
Paradox does DLC like no one else. The way they just like constantly add stuff to the game, but I think some of the stuff they add and charge for that may only be like $5, other games just add in free updates.
They are very notorious for that.
There's like, if you want to own everything, like, expect to buy a bundle that costs like $400.
Yeah, on Steam.
I think City Skylines to own everything is like $300 or $250.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
But you can enjoy just the base game. Like, I don't own any DLC for City Skylines.
Yeah, I was going to say, the base game is fine. I think there definitely are... It was more so with Crusader Kings 2, for obvious reasons. It was a long... It's been out... It was out longer. It had more support. It, you know, I had a lot more DLC for it. But there are definitely ones that are pretty much mandatory if you want to have the best experience. And I think CK3 is no different in that regard. I'm about to be that guy that buys DLC for the same game on two different platforms. Like Gus was upset about last week, which he's got a little bit of a point. Like, do I need to buy this twice? Even if it
he doesn't even know like what I didn't respond to that. Cause I didn't want to go on a rant, but Destiny 2 like has crossplay. So you can play or cross save, cross progression. So you can play on any platform. And but you can only play the content you own on that platform. So if you want to play back and forth between PC and Xbox or PC or Xbox and PlayStation, you have to buy the expansion both places. And
they're expensive.
There's at least one other game that I play that is that way. And yeah, for sure, like Lightfall, the one that just came out, is $50. So if you want to play it on two platforms, that's $100.
Yeah.
Now it also supports crossplay. So if you want to play with your friends on another platform, you don't have to switch over. But I mean, it's just expensive.
Yeah, it's...
You may, now that you have a computer, you may end up just moving over to PC because the stuff comes out sooner.
I will say you're probably right, and the only reason is because there's a really annoying bug that they have not fixed on a console where you can't, like, you run out of save spots. Like, they don't have a save spot restriction, but there's a bug that restricts the amount of saves you can have, and so I keep having to overwrite older saves, and eventually I'm just going to be like, well, I don't want to lose this character, so I'm screwed. So until they fix that bug, which right now it's not that big of a deal, but I could see it being a problem. And just the detail of the mods, obviously there's advantages to PC, but yeah,
and mouse and keyboard is just better for some games. But anyway, so like you said, the final game to talk about is City Skylines 2. The big thing is that it's coming day one Game Pass. It's going to be PC, Xbox Series X, and PS5. So it's current gen only. They're not doing last gen. It's coming 2023, and it seems like it might be coming kind of soon because the achievements are already visible on achievement websites like True Achievements and Achievements.com or XboxAchievements.com. So if the achievements are already published, it's probably going to come out within the next 6 months. They did not show any gameplay. They showed a cinematic trailer only, with a new logo design for City Skylines 2. I'm really, really excited for this, especially after getting back into City Skylines. Like, I will have this day one. It will only be a question of, I guess, if it supports cross save between the console and PC, I'll just play it on Game Pass. But if it doesn't, I don't know, maybe I'll buy it on Steam, or I could just do the Windows launcher version.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I say I doubt it is just because neither Stellaris nor Hearts of Iron or Crusader Kings 3 support cross-save. So.
Yeah, and I don't think City Skylines does for the version on Windows Store. Like, I think, actually, I'm not sure. I know it doesn't with the Steam version. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you play the Game Pass version on console and on PC, I'm not sure if those cross-save. I know the console doesn't with Steam, but I'm not sure if it does with the Windows Store version. But yeah, I'm just so excited about this. Like, I can't wait. Like, this, of everything we've talked about recently, I don't know why I'm so uncontrollably excited about this. My dog is really, really excited because it's almost mealtime.
Our former mascot.
Do you hear her running in circles behind me?
Yeah, a little bit. Her collar jingling.
Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, it's interesting. This is like the one Paradox game that I have never played. I've played EU4. Played Victoria 2, Crusader Kings, Hearts of Iron 3 and 4, Stellaris. I think I said that already. But I guess Imperator Rome, I've never played, which no one likes that game. Or March of the
Eagles.
I've
only played this and like an hour of Crusader Kings. That's it. Maybe a couple hours of Crusader Kings.
And it's mostly because like city building games are cool in concept to me, but I always... It's like you with Crusader Kings. I always am just immediately overwhelmed thinking about like, oh, I need to organize the right road structure. I need to put bridges in the right spot. You know, traffic lights, buildings, tall buildings.
You do have to get over that and be comfortable demolishing stuff later and rebuilding to like, because you have to grow first before you have revenue to do Like, you can't build a giant like bridge that supports mass transit with the budget you have when you start. So like, you have to bulldoze later, which sucks because you're like killing a community to get it to thrive even more. But I don't know, like the city I was building when I got back into it this week, I was trying to get like really high tech industry. So I was like educating the crap out of all my people. But I also sometimes in my head, I cross my wires and I forget how the simulation works. And I start defaulting to stuff that worked in SimCity 3 and SimCity 4 and forgetting that SimCity or City Skylines works in an entirely different way. And not all of the things have the same relationship of like how you develop certain things. But it was fun regardless. Okay, let's move on past Paradox to number 3, Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League. Right after a few weeks ago, we talked about the reveal of the gameplay that was shown at the PlayStation State of Play. The game is now rumored to be delayed. We still don't have official confirmation from WB or Rocksteady, but multiple sources were reporting across the industry. I think the one I put in here is Polygon, but I also saw it on IGN, VGC, all kinds of places. The question is, how long will the delay be? Because initial reports said it was delayed to later this year, but then a couple of reports from other sources came up after that saying it could be delayed as far as 2024. All the articles were citing the negative response to the Sony State of Play gameplay, and I think that part is speculation. I feel like we don't know that that's the case because that wasn't cited from the sources. That was all speculation clearly in the articles. Because how much are you really going to change in 6 months as far as the fundamental gameplays of the game? Like, this game was built in such a way, the battle pass, the gear score, all that stuff is not going to change in 6 months. You can make polish changes. You can difficulty changes. You can tweak little things. Like, you can, there are big things you can do, but you're not going to overhaul the entire structure of gameplay for the entire game. Even if you delay it a whole year, I don't know that you're going to get that much done, but you could make some sizable stuff in a year. So I have mixed feelings on this, Spencer. I'm usually not bothered by delays because if a game needs to be delayed, that's what it needs, right? I'm more just saddened by what we saw with everything that we talked about a few weeks ago. And I hope that with the extra time, if this does turn out to be true, that they give it more polish and they tweak what they can to kind of realign with fan expectations. Like, I don't feel like anything they showed us was completely wrong by itself, but in aggregate, it appeared like that this could be a problem. And there are little things they should do, and they should look really hard at the response to Gotham Knights, Marvel's Avengers, and a bunch of other live service games that have come out in the last 2 years and say, okay, what do people really not like about these games? And are we doing those same things?
Sorry. No, I mean, you're right. To me, it's like, what can you really do? You can't do anything in 6 months to, materially alter the gameplay or most of the things that people had complaints about. So to me, maybe they realized, okay, people already are not reacting well to this. Maybe we need to make sure this thing is as close to perfect as we can make it as far as, clearing out all the bugs, making sure that it runs as smoothly as possible, everything along those lines. Like you said, you can't really change the live service nature of it to much degree. You can't really change gear score, all those kind of fundamental aspects of the game that kind of make it what it is. So I think that's got to be really their only bet is, let's make this game as tight as possible. Let's get this as clean as possible. And so that people can't at least knock us for that. Like, we have a great running game that plays well, but there are other issues, things that we made, decisions that we made years ago that we can't change now. I don't know, I think the recent gameplay, all that was pretty disappointing. So I don't necessarily know what is going to end up with this game anyway. I think because it's Rocksteady and because it's DC, like, you've got a lot of built-in clout as it is. And I think the fans of those franchises will come out for this game. But as far as like the wider market, I don't know. I mean, I'm a DC fan. I enjoyed some of the Arkham games, you know, some of the Rocksteady games, not all of them. So I'm kind of the target audience for this. And I don't, as it stands, it did not look appealing to me by and large.
Yeah. Well, and Gotham Knights didn't sell and it had DC stuff all over it. So at some point you have to make a good game in addition to the IP.
True. Yeah. So I don't know.
Because
I mean,
people do see reviews, right? Like if Metacritic is 30, like that gets blown up everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, even CNN picks up DC released new game and it tanks stock price, like that kind of stuff.
I mean, to
me,
though,
the opinions of the general,
I don't know if
public.
Delaying this thing to the fall solves your problems, though, because you run into Spider-Man, you run into Starfield, you run into, you know, whatever else. So good luck either way. I think May was perfect for a game like this. Late May, that seems perfect to me.
I know it really was. But hopefully the truth of the matter is I think it's not. They're not going to be changing the game. I think it's just polish, and that's what they're going to tell us when they finally do announce the delay. And honestly, I bet we hear about that either today, the day this is going live, or the day after. Like, we'll probably hear about it early this week since it was leaking early last week, or which usually indicates, you know, they're working on messaging internally, because at the point it leaks, that means somebody has made that decision and it's trickled down to enough people to know to get to the press. And when it gets to that point is when the PR and marketing engine are spinning up what they're going to say publicly. So I would expect something to be said this week. Okay, moving on. Halo Infinite. We already talked about the Season 3 update and how I've been playing it. One thing I didn't touch on, though, is that the PC version got ray tracing for sun-based shadows, or what did they call it? They called it sun shadows, ray traced sun shadows. On the PC version of multiplayer. So not in campaign, just in multiplayer. But the surprising thing is they also announced that it's coming to console in the near future. So I don't know that they said near future, but it's coming in the future to console. So sometime this year, it seems like we're going to get ray traced sun shadows on console. I'm curious how that'll affect frame rate, but it's cool. I mean, I didn't think we'd ever see ray tracing on Halo Infinite. I kind of feel like those kind of features weren't ever going to come to the game. So it's a bonus add.
Glad
I don't really
that
have anything else to say.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm glad that, you know, they're not giving up on this game. Still doing stuff for it, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, there is good buzz around Season 3. So then they promise Season 4 is going to be sooner. So we'll see if they keep that promise and if it starts to turn the tide on the game. I mean, you keep hearing these like revitalization attempts with Battlefield 2042, and those aren't taking because nobody cares about Battlefield 2042. So can Halo do better than that? I mean, there are redemption stories. So, I mean, famously Rainbow Six Siege was panned in previews and not that great at launch. And then it's now one of the biggest shooters around. So still 7-8 years after launch. So next, Telltale Games. Not Telltale, Traveler's Tales Games, the Lego game makers. The rumors circling them this week are that they've canceled a bunch of games. And the three main ones talked about are a Lego Disney game that was apparently a new style of like Diablo exploration adventure game in a Lego style, which I think would be really interesting because that's more of a different take on the Lego games. And then also a Lego Guardians of the Galaxy game that was more of a traditional Lego game, like Lego Star Wars, the Skywalker Saga. And then a third game that was apparently a WB property shooter. So kind of like Multiversus, only a shooter. Apparently all three of these games have been canceled. And I mostly am not as much interested in what was canceled. Like, okay, Lego Disney, Lego Guardians of the Galaxy, those could have been fun. I don't know that I need that many more. I mean, I guess I would have played those with my kids, so that would have been cool. But if those were canceled, what are they working on, right? Lego Star Wars, the Skywalker Saga is basically done. They have a little more DLC characters to add, and then they're done. So what's next? And if they're canceling all this stuff, some of which was rumored to have been in development for up to 4 years, what is the big thing that they're doubling down on that they're taking all these resources and putting them towards? Because there were no layoffs teased. Or rumored. So I want to know what they're working on. That's all I can think of. Spencer? Yeah,
that's weird to me that they would cancel these types of games. Like, because I didn't ever hear that the Skywalker saga did poorly from a sales perspective. And you'd think
it seems to have sold really well.
And you've got a Guardians of the Galaxy movie coming out this year. So why not try to market those things together? I mean, maybe it wasn't going to be ready or something. I don't know. But people like Guardians of the Galaxy. People like Marvel properties. So that's strange to me. Maybe they thought it was too niche, Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't know. And then the Disney one, I mean, I don't know. That's actually, it's actually surprising to me that there hasn't been a game like that from anybody concerning Disney yet.
Well, there's that Dreamlight Valley that's like a mobile game on console, but that, and my wife tried to play that game, and it is so monotonously boring that I can't believe that they could call that a game. Like, it was bad. It has all the things to be a good game, but like, you just walk around like clicking on stuff and it just seemed so incredibly boring. My wife got bored with it after like 20 minutes. So, and she loves Disney. Like, it's probably her favorite IP next to maybe Star Wars. So
classic Disney, since technically Disney owns Star Wars, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, that's true. I meant Disney animation. Yeah. Okay. Number six, Dragon Ball Z Budokai Tenkaichi is getting a sequel. It was announced at the Dragon Ball FighterZ, one of the tournaments that they were having. They had a trailer for what would be the Budokai Tenkaichi 4, although we don't know that that will be the name of it. I don't have too much to say here, except for I was a devout fan of Dragon Ball Z when I was very young, like in my like 8 to 14 age. And that was when it started coming to the United States with subs and dubs. And I loved a lot of the early games. I played Budokai 1, 2, and 3, but I kind of tapped out before the Tenkaichi series came on. And then there were three of those games, and there's been tons of games since. And I have dipped my toe back in playing Dragon Ball Z Kakarot because that was the game I always wanted when I was a kid, which is like an open world RPG in the Dragon Ball universe where you just play as Goku and play out the story of the show. But I still haven't finished it. And I did upgrade to they did the Series X upgrade. And I talked about how heinous the upgrade to get your save transfer was on the show like a month or so ago. But I haven't gotten back to the actual game. And I haven't. So fighting games aren't generally my forte. But I do think this is really exciting just because it's such a beloved series. And some of the other stuff they've done with Dragon Ball Z in the last few years has been cool. I think the hardest part about this is it's a fighting game and it's a different style fighting game. It's more of a 3D fighter than a 2D fighter, but Dragon Ball Z FighterZ was so dominantly popular as a 2D fighter that I feel like it's going to be hard to follow, even though it's not in quite the same genre. But Budokai Tenkaichi is very popular, so I'm sure it'll do very well. Spencer, do you have any relationship to these games?
I do not.
Or do you just want to move on?
I didn't think you did. I've never seen a second outside of It's Over 9,000, the meme of Dragon Ball of any variety.
Oh, so you've never, you haven't seen Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Kai, Dragon Ball GT, Dragon Ball Super, none of it?
Nothing. No, no touchstone at all for me in Dragon Ball.
There's like, I think there's five major series, although one of them's a remake of one of the other ones. And then there were 12 or 13 original movies, and then they added a few more that were based on Super.
I know there's a lot. Yeah, I knew there was a lot.
There's a lot.
But I've just never been interested. I had friends in high school and coworkers, throughout college and such that were into it, but no, never been a thing for me.
I would love to watch all the way through Super and kind of relive my childhood through the expansion of that, but it's just so time consuming to watch anime.
It's
and
old,
I'm not an anime guy.
It's been around since the 80s, right?
Well,
Dragon Ball in general?
Yes and no. Dragon Ball's from the 80s. Dragon Ball Z, I think, was 90s. But Super, which is the continuation of it, just came out like 5 years ago. So that's like fairly recent. It picks up the story at the end of Dragon Ball Z. And there was a sequel to Dragon Ball Z called Dragon Ball GT, but it wasn't made by the same creator, and it went kind of in a crazy direction. So it's like non-canon now, or alt-universe or something. I'm sure anyone listening to this that knows the Dragon Ball Z lore way better than I do is like rolling their eyes and mad. But from a layman's perspective and someone that hasn't been in that world in like 20 years, this is my take on it, or at least my summary of explaining it to Spencer. Feel free to add him on Twitter and explain him all the Dragon Ball Z lore. Just blow up
his Toriyama's Wikipedia page. 1984 was when Dragon Ball.
I will say we went to some comic book stores in New York City when I was there a few weeks ago, or I guess that was a week and a half ago. Saw some really cool like Dragon Ball Z figurines and comic books and stuff and manga or manga, depending on how you want to say that, Americanized in comic book stores. They had whole manga sections that were pretty dope. My wife found some Sailor Moon stuff that she thought was cool. And it's funny because Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z are like the most basis American anime because they came to, you know, the Toonami cartoon block to where like even people that don't like anime have watched it. Whereas they're not really like deep dive anime, like what is popular these days, like One Punch Man and what's that one, one everybody keeps talking about?
Oh, Bleach was the one that people knew about and I talked about a lot in high school.
There's one that's still airing right now that like my feed on Twitter is constantly blown up about that people just can't stop watching and I can't think of the name of it. But anyway, I don't know how we got on anime. The last two things are Capcom had an event this week. Not a lot interesting that Spencer and I would want to talk about. The two things I pulled out of it are Exo Primal, which I don't think really looks like it's for me, but they gave it a release date July 14th, and it's coming to Game Pass day one. So those were big announcements. And then the second big announcement was Resident Evil 4. It has a demo that's out now. It's called Chainsaw Demo, and it's on Xbox Series X right now. So if you want to go check out the Resident Evil 4 remake, what it's like, you can go check out the Chainsaw Demo.
It's the kind of the opening of the game. From my understanding, that's coming out March 24th, so a couple weeks.
Is that a game you'll get when it goes on sale later, Spencer?
Probably, yeah. Like I did the last two. I don't know, though. I mean, it depends.
Four is iconic.
Yeah, well, so I got 2 and 3 on sale, but I just don't play them enough. I don't know. We'll see. I'm interested. That was the first one that I played back. I think I played it on like my phone or something. I don't know. Yeah, there was like a mobile version of it. It wasn't the real game. I didn't actually play the real version of the game ever. Five was the first one that I played.
I'm gonna look that up. Wow, Five is not super well regarded.
I know.
Isn't that the lowest regarded one?
Game Pass.
I'm gonna Google that later about the phone version of Resident Evil 4. By the way, I'm not gonna do it now on the show and make people listen to me type away again. But Game Pass additions and subtractions for March. So we have two games added to the cloud, Dead Space 2 and 3. It seems like a good thing to do right after the release of the remake of the first one. Valheim, the popular PC game, is coming to console in game preview and on Game Pass March 14th. Sid Meier's Civilization 6 is coming March 16th. This one I'm actually pretty excited about. I thought about installing it on my PC and checking it out, but I don't know if I'll get around to it because I've been playing City Skylines, so that's kind of my PC game right now. And then Ni No Kuni 2 Revenant Kingdom The Prince's Edition, which is quite a title, is coming March 21st. And then leaving Game Pass on March 15th, we have F1 2020, which, side note, they always remove two games ago F1 games when they add the newest one. So I believe the other F1 game for this year was added last
2022
week.
2022 is on there.
Yeah, so 2022 and 2021 are both on there, and 2020 is dropping off.
Yep.
Other things being removed, Goat Simulator, Kentucky Route Zero, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, Paradise Killer, Undertale, Young Souls, and Zero Escape, the non-nonary game. Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy was my game of the year that game came out, like 2 years ago. You should play that game. It's awesome, especially if you like Marvel or the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. It's super good. And it's a story game. It's fairly linear, so you can play through it in a 10, 12 hour sit through, maybe 15. So it's definitely playable. Like, it's leaving March 15th, so that's in the next 3 days.
Yeah, you probably don't have
time. You'd have to mainlight it in two days.
It goes on sale. It goes on sale a fair amount, I think.
That's true too.
Yeah.
Yeah, try it on Game Pass.
A cult classic.
Get it on sale.
A cult classic.
They gave that away at one point. I'm pretty sure I own it.
Yeah, I do too.
Because it was a game game of the month or whatever.
The only other one I'll comment on is that Kentucky Route Zero game. It has a very striking cover. It's like a bloodhound, I think, or some sort of droopy looking dog wearing a straw hat. And every time I see it, I click on it and just look at it, like look at the game page and then read about it. Cause I'm like, what is this game? But I've never downloaded it or anything like that. Just a very striking cover.
Dog in a straw hat. You are TV edition. I've never seen this image. I've known about this game for a long time. I know what the game looks like, but I had never seen that image until you just described it.
I don't
think
it's a bloodhound. I don't know what it is though. Maybe like a Weimaraner or something.
Basset hound. I don't know.
Like some sort of dog breed. Oh, you know what? What's the Tennessee Volunteers Smokey mascot? What kind of dog is that?
No idea.
Smokey dog, Tennessee. He is a blue tick coonhound. I don't think it's one of those, but maybe it's some type of coonhound. But yeah, there you go.
Yeah, cool. Well, that's it for this week. I feel like this week was full of fun stuff to talk about. I was excited to talk this week. Starfield, Paradox Interactive. The only thing, all I think about every week now is how long until Cities Skylines 2 is in my console or PC.
Pretty soon, like, probably.
I want it right now. It's stupid that I'm more excited about this than any other game this year now. Like, Starfield is coming out this year, and I'm more excited about Cities Skylines 2. I know. It's because it's like... The analytical side of me, just like there's something pure about resource management of a city. Like, I don't know what it is.
Yeah,
it just triggers something in me. It's very like just satisfying and relaxing. And it's also satisfying because you can pause the city, like, and freeze time. So you're never like forced to make a sudden decision. You can always freeze things and then look at all the analysis and decide what you're going to do and plan it all out and stuff. It's just really cool. So I'm going to nerd out on that when it comes out. That's it. I'm Tim Shelton. You can follow me on Twitter at Tim Shelton.
And I'm Spencer Rain. You can follow me on Twitter at Makes It Rain.
Thanks for listening. See you next week.
New episodes post every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. You can contact us on Twitter at MultiformPod or by email at questions@multiformpodcast.com. If you enjoyed our show and you're feeling extra generous, please share it with your friends or on social media. You can subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you listen.